she gives them a different name to protect the innocent.
Where's that?
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thank you, thank you.
It's very helpful.
So we began the 10th perek, Agozel Umachil. And we got up to the two dots, which is approximately 10 lines down from the top of the page. Now, the main question here is, if somebody steals something and he dies and his children inherit him, do they have to pay back the gzeila? And that question divides up into two parts. Number one is what's called gzeila be'en, the stolen object is still intact. And the second case is where ein gzeila be'en, which means that the yorshim ate up, they consumed the stolen object. So the Mishnah says the following: Im hiniach lifnehem, if the father died and left the gzela for the yarshim, is pturim milshalim. The yarshim did not have to pay. Now let's assume, for argument's sake, we're talking about a case of gzela be'en. That means that the object is intact. Now there's a mitzvah of hashavas hagzela veishak. So why doesn't the obligation to return? Let's say, for example, in a general case, let's talk about basics. If let's say the father owes a chov, right? He borrowed $1,000 from somebody. Do the yorshim have to pay that chov?
Do they get it?
Yes.
So it depends on shibudim, right? If the father bequeathed to them a piece of karka and that karka is mishubedes, then the bal chov of the father has a right to collect from the yorshim through shibudim. If, on the other hand, there are no shibudim, you see, what shibudim really do is they create a kind of be'en, meaning that the loan is now crystallized in this particular object, so that the bal chov has rights to this object, almost like ownership rights. In fact, there's one man, the Yom Rav, in Masechta Pesachim, who says that if you have, as a bal chov, a shibud over chametz, you're over on bal yirov haymatzeh. That's how much ownership you have in shibudim. And that's the case of karka. But even in the case of metaltalin, in gzela, since the Torah says you have to return the object, then the object is considered like a shibud. And the fact that the yorshim claim, wait a minute, we're the guiltless, we didn't steal this object, why do we have to pay it back? That has nothing to do with our discussion, because we're not talking about veheshiv as gzela as a kind of mitzvah that's incumbent upon the gazlan, but we're talking about the rights of the nigzal to get back his object. He owns his object. Again, right now we're talking before Yeish. We'll see later on what happens after Yeish. But if, assuming the Nigzal is still out there looking for his object, he has rights to claim that object, whoever's holding on to it. It doesn't matter whether the Gazan is holding on to it. It doesn't matter if a Lokech is holding on to it. It doesn't matter if the Yorshim are holding on to it. Whoever is in possession of the object, that object belongs to the Nigzal, and he has a right to say, Lididi, I'm coming to take my object. And that's what's saying. So yet here, to our surprise, it says pturim milshalim. Now, if the object is still be'en, if that premise is correct, why don't the yorshim have to pay back and return the object to its rightful owner? The only possible way of getting out of this dilemma, if we assume the object is be'en, is through what mechanism?
Yeish.
We're going to have to introduce yeish over here. Now, whether Yeish itself is enough to generate a kinyan is a sugya daf samach vav. Let's assume that our sugya is not willing to go as far as to say that Yeish bichdi kani, and therefore we need Yeish plus something else. Now, what that plus something else is could be, again, subdivided, and it bifurcates into many possibilities. Maybe Shini Hashem, maybe Shini Rishus. Now the question becomes, how do we view Yerusha? Now, in order to appreciate the Gemara's Chakiri about Yerusha, we have to raise a very basic question. Is there such a thing as a Hakna without a Maisa Kinyan? Does the halacha recognize a hakna, a transaction in which ownership was transferred from Reuven over to Shimon without a maisa kinyan? My intuitive response would be absolutely no. My knee-jerk response would be there's no such thing. Every transaction which is a kinyan requires a maisa kinyan. And the exception to this rule would be the case of Yerusha, which baffles our mind. How is it possible? I think, Jonathan, somebody wants to just squeeze by if you... I know the trouble with this table is it's too wide, so it's very hard to. In any event, that's what the Gemara says. Omar Rami Bar Chama Zoso Meres Rishus Yoresh Kirishus Lokeach Dami. That the Torah does in fact recognize a kinyan without a maisa kinyan. Because when Reuven dies and his son Chanoch inherits him, there was no maisa kinyan at all. Chanoch automatically steps into his father's shoes and owns all the possessions, the entire estate of his father. Again, if there are other yorshim, they'll have to divvy it up. And for that, we have to learn a parak called Yesh Nochlin. But be that as it may, if, let's say, to make life simple for ourselves, there's only one yoresh, that yoresh automatically, by virtue of the fact that his father left this world, he inherits his father. Now, what is the nature of that inheritance? Comes along Rami Bar Chama, and he says the following: the nafkamina is going to be whether or not the nigzal has recourse to collect his gzela from the yarshim. If I assume that the yarshim have a kinyan, that Yerusha equals a kinyan, even though there's no what? Maisa kinyan. You have a kinyan in the absence of a maisa kinyan. Then if there's a kinyan, we have a principle called yeish plus kinyan, or otherwise known as shinui rishus, and that's enough to be kona on behalf of the person who acquired ownership. And now the ownership of the nigzal is completely gone. In such a case, the nigzal has no recourse to collect his object. You may ask, well, what about the other flip side of Heishim's Exil? Right? Heishim's Exil has two sides. One side of it is to return the object, and the other side is to return its value in event that the object is lost. That's called a chiyuv damim. However, there's a fundamental difference between the two. The chiyuv of Heishim is like gzela, as long as the gzela is be'en, means that the nigzal simply has rights to say, I claim my object, it's mine, give it back to me. The second chiyuv, which is a chiyuv damim, is a specific or unique chiyuv that's incumbent upon the gazlan. When we translate the chiyuv of Hashavas HaGzeil into damim, that's only vis-a-vis the gazlan himself. The yorshim have a right to say, anan lo gazlinan, we weren't the thief, we didn't implement, and we are not guilty of the aveir of gzeil, and if we don't have a chiyuv damim. So first and foremost, Rami Bar Chama wants to solve the problem of the Heishiv Zagzela, not as a Chiyuv Damim, not as a result of the Gzela and the Averis Gzela, but simply as a result of the fact that the Nigzal has claim to his object, it's Be'en. And the only way we can resolve that problem is through Yeush. If Yeush Bechdi Lo Kani, we have to introduce Yeush plus Shinui Rishus, and then we have to assume that Yerusha is a Kinyan. Oh, if Yerusha is a Kinyan, then the Yarshim now have a kinyan, they've acquired ownership over the object that was stolen, and now the nigzal has no recourse to collect their object, because their object is no longer their object. Of course, they can still sue the gazlan to pay damim, because the gazlan can't be mechayim the mitzvah of Heishiv HaGzeil literally with the ban. He's going to have to substitute the damim. And then again, we have the whole question, what if the object went up in value or down in value? Does he play kishas HaGzeil or not, as we discussed at great length? But as far as recourse to the banim, to the yarshim, that he doesn't have as far as the ban itself. Nor does he have a recourse to collect the damim of the ban. And why is that? Because they didn't steal, and therefore they're not guilty of gzela. And that's what we have over here. Now, why is it that if yeush lo kani, yeush v'shini rishus is kone? What is the magic here of Shini Rishus? In other words, if the gazlan has stolen something and the nigzal has hope that he will retrieve his object at some point down the line, either the gazlan will klap al chet, or alternatively has recourse through bezdin to force the gazlan, if you have eidim on the gzail, to force the gazlan to pay up, the nigzal has not yet given up hope. Now, if that be the case, then surely there's no kinyan on behalf of the nigzal, except for Hegdesh, as we discussed the other day. But what happens if the nigzal says, violently lechisarkis, there's no way I'm going to get it back. He despairs totally.
Comes after.
Oh, so if you hold yeish bichti kani, then just like in Aveda, yeush makes something into hefker. again, notwithstanding the Nesivis, who says that that's not so, but everybody else except for the Nesivis holds that Yeish equals Hefker. Then, so too in the case of a Chefetz HaGozel, like a Chefetz HaAvud, Yeish is Kon. But according to the Man Yomar, that Yeish is only Kon in Aveda, but not in Gzela, and our Gemara seems to be assuming so, that Yeish Bifti Lo Koni. What do you gain by adding another variable into the equation, namely Shini Rishus? So the one who first attacked this question was the Ramban. Where is the Ramban? The Ramban is back on Daf Samach Vav. And of course, we have a Kabbalah from Arabeim that whatever the Ramban says is profound. And this is not an exception to the rule. The Ramban says the following. The Yeish in Aveda is a conditional kinyan. And the condition that has to be fulfilled is that the yesh took place before someone picks up the aveda. If Shimon picks up Ruvain's aveda before Ruvain was misyayish, then we paskin in the machlokas between Abai and Rava, like we always paskin, namely like whom?
Rava.
Like Rava. Okay, I didn't think I was able to fool you that easily. This is one of the six cases in Shas where we paskin like Abai against Rav. I see I was a total failure here. Or maybe I was a success, I don't know. Depends how you understand my intention. So Abai says that Yesh Shalom Midas Lo Avi Yesh. And the Gemara explains at the beginning of Elu Metzias that the reason for that is called the Isura Oso Liyodeh. Says the Ramban, the same logic of Bi'isuro Oso Liyodeh that blocks the efficacy of Yeush in the case of Aveda applies in the case of Gzela, because Bi'isuro Oso Liyodeh. How did the Gazel get a hold of this object? What stimulated the Yeush of the Nigzal? It was Bi'isuro Oso Liyodeh. It was the Isur Gzela. Says the Ramban, Yeush and Isuro Oso Liyodeh are mutually exclusive. You can't have both. And therefore, whenever it's Isuri Yossi Liyodin, there's no Yeish. That's called Yeish Lo Kani. Says the Ramban, Bamed Varmamur, if we're talking about the Gazlan. The Gazlan is Bisur Yossi Liyodin. How did he get hold of this object? He stole it. That's called Bisur Yossi. But if he passes it on to someone else, that already removes the Bisur Yossi Liyodin. Says the Ramban, now the Yeish itself could be Kone. It comes out that according to the Ramban, there is a definite sequence here that we mentioned on Yom Shlishi, namely first the Yeish took place, and that's really where the inherently the power of Hafkas, Kinyoni, Nigzal applies, but we need a second condition because the blockage of Yeush, the barrier to allow Yeush to be effective is Bisur Asliyodeh. Once I remove Bisur Asliyodeh, I've removed the blockage, I go back to Yeush, and now Yeush can be Kone. So again, Yeush is Kone Lekuliyam. Bein ba'aveda u'bein b'gzela. The only difference between gzela and aveda, and why is yesh b'chdilo kani according to that man yom gzela? Because of bisur asliyadeh. And bisur asliyadeh applies equally to aveda, because we pass it like abai yesh lo midas lo avi yesh. However, says the Ramban, if we could circumvent the problem, neutralize the problem of bisur asliyadeh, then yesh itself would be kone, just like it's kone in aveda. And how do we neutralize that? Through the kinyan, when the gazlan passes on the object to someone else, and that itself is enough to remove bisur asliyadeh, such that now what will operate? What will be effective? Yeish. So everybody and their uncle jumps on this Ramban from our sugya. How could the Ramban possibly be correct? The Gemara says that whether or not the Yarshim have to return this gzela that's be'en depends upon whether Yerusha is considered a kinyan or not. According to the Ramban, what difference does it make? Even if I grant you that Yerusha is not a kinyan, who needs a kinyan? As long as I can neutralize the bisur asliyadeh, Yeush itself should be kone. And if we're talking about a case where there is Yeush, why then does the Gemara insist, well, Rabbi Barcham insists, that we have to introduce that Rishus Yoresh Kirshus Lokeach Dami in order to justify why the Yarshim don't have to repay the return of this Gzela? Forget about that. The Yarshim have a right to say, I didn't do any sort of Isur here. I'm not guilty of Isur Asiliyadeh, and therefore Yeish itself should be Kone. Because again, the premise is, according to Ramban, that Yeish itself is Kone in Gzela, just the problem is Isur Asiliyadeh. So here Rabbi Chanan has a very interesting pshat in the Ramban. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman, you know, he was killed by the Nazis. Yimach Shemom. Rabbi Chanan said that we misunderstand what Bi'isura Asiliyoni means. Bi'isura Asiliyoni doesn't mean that his possession of the object is a result of an isur. That's the literal translation. But sometimes we're mistaken when we define things literally. And that's what the problem is that we have. Okay, fine. I'm not going to get off on a tangent here because it's very tempting. But I'll try to avoid it. So Rabbi Chanan says, what's Bi'isura Asiliyoni? Bi'isura Asiliyoni means a chovas hashava. And a chovas hashava, to return the object that belongs to someone else, is basically universal. Everybody has a chiyuv hashava. It's not just limited to the gazlan. In the case of aveda, anyone who picks up the aveda has a chiyuv hashava to return the object to its rightful owner, and the same logic should apply to gzela as well. So what does Bi'isura Asiliyoni mean? Bi'isura Asiliyoni means that when you pick up the object, you're chayv in hashava. However, if you made a kinyan on the object, then you're not chayv in hashava because you can claim, I'm the bialim. Says Rabbi Chanan, what the Ramban means is that we need two powers here. We need two agents, and we combine the two together, we get some sort of explosive end product. We combine yeush with kinyan. Kinyan gives a person rights that supersede and trump the chiyuv hashava. That's what Bi'isura Asiliyoni means. In the case of the gazlan, he cannot be kona with yeush. Why? Because the chiyuv hashava is imposed upon him because he obtain the object illegally. That's called Bi'isura Asiliyoni. He can't claim ownership over the object because I'm holding on to the object. And therefore, even though, despite the fact that the Nigzal was Misyayish, nevertheless, Yeish Bichti Lo Kani doesn't have enough of a power to generate a kinyan on behalf of the Gazlan. But what could generate a kinyan? Another kinyan. The only problem is, how do I have a right to create another kinyan when it's Gzela? The answer is Yeush. What Yeush does is, says Rabbi Chanan, it allows the kinyan of somebody else to be effectuated, to be effective. And now the person who has a kinyan right, he can say, it's not Bi'isura Asiliyoni, I don't have a Chiyuv HaShava. What do you tell me, I have a Chiyuv HaShava because it belongs to him? No, it belongs to me. How does it belong to you when it belongs to him? The answer is Yeush. That's what the Ramban means. When the Ramban emphasizes that Yeush itself inherently should have enough power to allow for the Gazlan to be Kona, the object, except the only problem is Bi'isura Asiliyoni, what the Ramban really means is that Yeush falls short because how can you create a kinyan on something which has an owner? And that owner is not willing to part with it. You know, I can have an owner, I can be machne to you, that's called das machne, but if there's no das machne, the exile doesn't want to part with it. This is an heirloom from his ancestors, he needs it, he wants it. This is a painting which now the Austrian government took over, but it was mine until the Nazis came to power. Nobody knows what I'm talking about, that's good, you don't go to movies, I'm very proud of you. So there's no das machna on the part of the Nigzal. And therefore the Nigzal has a right to say, I impose my rights as the kinyan, as the bailim, and you, Mr. Gazlan, have no rights to impose new bailim and say that you have a kinyan. Ah, but when the Gazlan passes on the object to somebody else, a third party, through Torah's kinyan, there's a certain power, says the Rabbi Chanan, inherent in that kinyan. And that power of kinyan is such that it's able to trump and neutralize the chiyuv hashava. Because the chiyuv hashava is based on the nigzal's claim to ownership. Comes along the third party and he says, but I also have claims to ownership. The gazlan cannot claim ownership because he stole it. And if he stole it, then the kinyan of the nigzal stands in direct conflict with the gazlan's attempt to establish a kinyan. Since the gazlan is not successful in establishing his kinyan because Bi'isura Asiliyoni, therefore he's chayv in hashava. When he passes it on to a third party through Torah's kinyan, then the Chiyuv HaShov is Paka, because the Chiyuv HaShov essentially is a result of a claim of Kinyan on behalf of the Nigzal. Now, the person who bought the object from the Gazlan has rights to claim, well, I have a Kinyan. My Kinyan was not illegal. I didn't steal anything from you. Comes along Rava and he says, wait a minute, I can't accept this logic. You're telling me that there's such a thing as a Kinyan without a Maisa Kinyan? Can't be. The Torah only recognizes and validates a Kinyan through a Maisa Kinyan. So what do we do with Yerusha? Says Rava, Rava Amar Rishus Yoresh Lav Kirishus Lokeh Domi. There's no Kinyan. The only rights to this object and Bailus in terms of the Yerushim is because they stand in the place of their father. There's no Kinyan here. So how could they own it if not for the fact that they are an extension of the Rishus of the father? Which is a phenomenal idea that when the father owns something, he owns it not only on his own behalf, but he owns it on behalf of his heirs as well, in event or when the time comes to depart from this world. No, if that be the case, then we're left with Yeush, and we have no Kinyan. If we have no Kinyan, then the Bonim, the Yerushim, are in the same exact position as their father, and therefore Bisura Asi Liyade. If we're back to Bisura Asi Liyade, that blocks Yeush. How can therefore the Mishnah say that the Nigzal has no recourse to get back the Be'en from the Yerushim? Rava says we're going to have to assume that the Chayfetz is not Be'en. We have two choices here. We're at crossroads. The only way of justifying the fact that the Mishnah establishes that the Nigzal has no recourse to collect his gzela from the Bonim, from the Yerushim, is one of two things. I have to recognize the equation between Yerusha and Kinyan, or I have to assume that the object is no longer Be'en. I can't have my cake and eat it too. I cannot assume both of these premises. Premise number one, that Yerusha is not a Kinyan, and premise number two, that the object is still Bien. Because if Gzela is not a Kinyan and the object is still Bien, then the situation of the Bonim is identical to the situation of their father, and therefore the Nigzal should have recourse to collect from the Bonim. So it comes out now that according to Rava, the children have already consumed the object. In fact, Tosa says that the whole perek is talking about hagozel umachel, it's talking about foodstuffs, which can be consumed, and this is exactly what happened. The children consumed the object. No, the object is gone. Does that mean, therefore, that the Nigzal has no recourse? We said the Chiyuv HaShov has two parts to it. Number one, it's vis-a-vis the Be'en. Number two, it's vis-a-vis the Damim. Why can't the Nigzal come to the Bonim and say, well, you ate my food, you know, you ate my cabbage, my halachos? Did anybody eat halachos here? Okay, you don't even know what halachos are. Okay, fine. Every country has their own names for it, but we call it, where I come from, halachos. You don't know what I mean. Stuffed cabbage. Now, I don't know what language halachos is. It's probably Polish or something.
Yiddish, probably.
Yeah, the Yiddish from what? That's the only thing.
When did you eat it?
So I want my halachos back, right? And if you don't give me my halachos back, then at least pay for them. Again, if it's chametz shalva pesach, then it's worthless. But assuming it's not chametz, it's not even kidneys, okay, that's an issue, then why don't you pay me the domim? And the answer is as follows. As far as the be'ed is concerned, the Nigzal has rights to say, give me back my object. But as far as domim is concerned, he can only sue for monetary compensation, the Gazlan himself. The Bonim have a right to say, look, we were not guilty of gzela, and therefore we don't have that Chiyuv HaShov. The second dimension of Chiyuv HaShov, namely Chiyuv Damim, that Tashlum is only relevant to the person who implemented the Gzela. You can't assume in any other case that there is a Chiyuv Damim. But this, my friends, is very complicated. Because there's a Chiyuv Damim which is generated by Hanna. What does that mean? Let's say my cow eats your tomatoes. So if I'm chayav because I was a poshea and I didn't guard my cow properly, then you could be tovea me as the balamas because I own the cow. But let's say there was no element of pshia, correct? Let's say, for example, my animal was on a high precipice and it slipped and fell down into your tomato patch and ate up your tomatoes. There you have no recourse to claim and sue me as a mazik because that was onus. And a mazik is not a mazik in mamon, meaning my cow, is not chayif owns. But the Gemara establishes in the sixth parak of Bava Kamma that nevertheless there's a chiyuv of hannah. Hannah itself, the fact that I don't have to feed my cow dinner tonight because my cow is already stuffed with your tomatoes, that's called hannah. And I have to pay you for hannah. So we're going to see Bli Neder, I don't know if we'll get to it today or maybe next week, that the Gemara is going to revisit this entire sugya. And how could it be that the Mishnah says that the Yarshim are completely exempt from paying damim? All right, as a gazlan, you can't pin them and sue them for tashlum gzela because they weren't guilty of gzela, but at least as hanah, because they fed this food either to themselves or to their children or to their cows, that should generate a chiyuv tashlume hanah, which is called in the Gemara's language demei basar bezol. Does anybody know what percentage that is? That's called two-thirds, shnei shlish. Demei basar bezol. That's a cheap price for meat. Okay, we'll get to it later on. Now the Gemara says, wait a minute. How could Rava possibly interpret our Mishnah as a case where the object that was stolen is no longer be'en, it's been consumed? We have a principle called the integrity of a Mishnah, or the integrity of a Braisa. That if I can prove to you that the Braisa in one case, or the Mishnah in one case is talking about X, then we have to assume straight across the board that it's talking about that X. Hamidik Tani Seif, I'll prove to you from the Seif of our Mishnah that we're talking where the Gzeilus be'en. What's the case? Im Hayadavar Sheish Bach Rayus. What's a Davar Sheish Bach Rayus? Karka. And a karka is always considered be'en. And the law is in the Mishnah Chayovim L'Shalim. In this case, the Yorshim will have to fork over this Gzeila, this karka, and return it to the Nigzal. Obviously, then, we're talking about a case of Be'en. We're not talking about a case of Ochlo. Michlal Duresha, Begzela Kayemes Askinu. In order to maintain the symmetry between the Resha and the Seifa, the mirror image, then we have to assume that even the Resha is talking about Gzela Kayemes. Amalekha Rava. Rava says, you mistakenly read the Mishnah. You have totally misinterpreted the Mishnah. The Mishnah is not talking about a Gazan who stole Karka. In fact, karka ain't an exelis. There's no such thing as gzelin karka. So what does the Mishnah mean that in the case where this karka, the Yarshim have to compensate the nigzal? The answer is, hachi kamami niach lemavim achrayis nechasim chayovim l'shalim. What that means is that when the father steals during his lifetime, the nigzal gains a shibud, a lien, L-I-E-N, on the nechasim of the gazlan. Now that lien is limited to what kind of nechasim? Karka. Because there's only betichus on karka, and therefore there's only shibud on karka. But let's say the father dies, the nigzal now has a shibud on the karka. Again, that shibud on the karka is a result of the fact that the chiyuv hashav on the gazlan is a twofold shibud. It's not only the object itself, but it's also damim. It's a conditional shibud which says that in order to guarantee that the nigzal will get paid and compensated for his loss, in event that the object that was stolen is destroyed, he has recourse to collect damim, either damim from the gazlan himself, or if the gazlan is dead, he can collect from the nechasim mishubadim, meaning the karka of the gazlan. Now the yorshim inherit a piece of karka that has a lien on it. By the way, in contemporary life, this is classic. Every mutik and darishnik, this is what happens. A person inherits something, and little does he know, because his father didn't reveal to him, that there's a lien on that piece of real estate. And before he blinks, the Valichov come and collect it, they sue him in a court, and he, who was, you know, he was saying Shechiyonu v'kimonu at his father's levaya because he was so besimcha. He wasn't saying Shechiyonu v'kimonu, but he was saying Baruch HaTov HaMeitiv because he inherited a gigantic piece of property. Little did he know that that piece of property is an oiska blazen ayer. I mean, it's an empty bag. It's just full of air because it's a shibud on those nechasim. So here the Yorshim was so excited they inherited a piece of karka, a piece of real estate. Little did they know that that karka is meshubad Bechaya VM to the Nigzal. And that's why the Mishnah says that in the Sefer, the Nigzal is going to have recourse to collect his, or the value of his stolen object, in this case through the Shibodim and the Karka, because the Nechasim and the Karka already Mishubodim during the Chai Ha'av. However, that has nothing to do with the Reisha, where the Reisha is talking about a case where the discussion is whether the Bonim, the Yorshim, are responsible to pay Damim out of their own pocket, not through Mishubadim. There's no Karka involved here, because all that the Yorshim inherited from their father in this case in the Reisha was a cow. And a cow is Metaltalin, so there's no Shibudim. They may have inherited also some cash. That's always a good thing. But in this case, they lechora should have to pay the cash in lieu of the fact that they swallowed up, they consumed the stolen object of the Nigzal, which they took over from their father after his death. The answer is no. Damim is not a chiyuv hashava that can be imposed or can be applicable to the Yarshim. So that's Rova. Now, what we're going to see now in the sugya is that there are two ways of interpreting this Mishnah about Achrayus, about the case of Karka. Now, one case, one interpretation of the Mishnah is offered by Rav Oshia. Rav Oshia, as you know, was the author of the Brisos, or at least the editor of the Brisos. Now, the other record of the interpretation of our Mishnah was transmitted by Rav Yehuda Nasi to his son Rav Shimon ben Yehuda. Now, wait a second. If you had two choices about how to interpret a Mishnah, the Mishnah could lend itself to two interpretations, what would you opt for? What would you prefer, Rav Oshia or Rebbe? Rebbe, because he's the author of the Mishnayos, correct? The Gemara doesn't interpret it that way. The Gemara thinks that if you have a Braisa that interprets the Mishnah, you know, it's like, I don't know if anyone here has any interest in art, but the art critics will come and look at a painting and they'll interpret it with an entire essay. And little do you know that the painter, right, the artist, had no clue that someone down the line would interpret like that. But it's irrelevant, because the art is a chefta. It's a work of art that exists on its own. So Rebbe may have had one understanding of the Mishnah, and he passed on that understanding to his son, Rabbi Shimon. But nevertheless, Rav Oshia had a different understanding of the Mishnah. The Gemara asks the following question: for Hamasni lei Rebbe Rav Shimon Bray, Rebbe himself interpreted this Mishnah to his son, Rabbi Shimon, and he said the following: Lo davar sheyesh b'achrayis mamish. When I wrote this Mishnah, I didn't have in mind karkos. El afilu para. Now, watch what goes on over here. I don't know if you ever heard of a cow called Elsie. In America, there's a very famous cow called Elsie the cow. I never met Elsie the cow, but according to the marketing theory, if I saw Elsie the cow, I would recognize Elsie the cow. So Rebbe assumes that there's certain well-known famous cows. They probably have pictures of it on the internet or on Facebook. Everybody gets a picture of somebody's cow. And therefore, everybody knows that that cow belongs to so-and-so. Now, if that cow belongs to so-and-so, how is it that somebody else bequeathed that cow to his heirs? And the answer is because he stole the cow. So watch what goes on here. There's Reuven and his son Chanoch, and there's Shimon. Shimon is the proud owner of the famous, world-famous Elsie the cow. And everybody knows that Shimon owns Elsie the cow. And this cow is so special, it won all the awards, that Shimon would never even dream of selling or parting with that cow. And now Reuven dies, and lo and behold, Chanoch ben Reuven is now the proud owner of Elsie the cow. How did that happen? The answer is Reuven stole Elsie the cow. Why would he do such a terrible thing? Because Elsie the cow is a very valuable cow. She does things that you and I have never seen a cow do. Like
jump through the hoop.
Jump through what?
The hoop.
Jump through the hoop. Elsie jumps through hoops. Even fired up hoops. And in South Africa, they would say that Elsie the cow deserves to be number 6. You know, there are 5 significant animals, but Elsie will give her number 6. So how is it that Reuven bequeaths Elsie the cow to his son Chanoch, when we know that Shimon has been the proud owner of Elsie cow? He won all the awards. So now the Shmua goes out. Chas v'sholom, I mean, it's Lashon Hara. Maybe it's not Lashon Hara because it's L'Torelis. You have to learn the Chofetz Chaim. That Chanoch is taking Elsie and jumping into hoops. And how does that happen? Because Reuven was a gazel. Says the Gemara, according to Rebbe's understanding of our Mishnah, and he authored the Mishnah, I think we should give him first rights to interpret the Mishnah. He says, Chayovim lahatzim ibnei kovet aviyah. Now this is a little bit strange, kovet aviyah. Kovet aviyah doesn't apply when the father is gone. It applies during his lifetime. And I'll prove it to you. Because the Braisa in Masechta Kiddushin gives us 6 cases, 6 examples of kibud av, and all of them presuppose that the father is still alive and well. Is machnis umotzi, is machase umagala, is machil umashke. I don't think you can be machil your father if he's already gone, with all due respect. So the Gemara says that there are 2 categories of kibud av. There's kavdeu v'chayov, and kavdeu li achar moso. However, that's not going to help me solve this problem. I'll tell you why. We have a machlokas in the Gemara whether kibud av mishal av or kibud av mishal ben. So my father asks me for a steak dinner, and I say to him, kibud av mishal av, Dad, I have no problem buying you a steak dinner, but give me your credit card. I need your plastic. And the law is l'halach l'mais, the kibud av mishal av. Now you're telling me that the Yarshim have to fork over this Elsie the cow and be minus a tremendous amount of money because of kibud av. That doesn't make any sense. That contradicts our very fundamental principle that kibud av is mishal av. The answer is Rabosai. There are 2 dimensions to kibud. There's one called kibud in the positive sense, and there's one called bizayon in the negative sense. When the halacha states that I don't have to spend a dime or a penny in order to be machabed my father, I can bill him and let him pay the restaurant, that's only as far as kibud is concerned. But as far as bizayon is concerned, not to be mavaza my father, I have a responsibility to pay the very last penny that I have in my bank account for that. This case is not a case of kibud av, even though the Gemara uses that term, but rather of bizayon of it. The fact that the people are talking and being maranim achar aviv, and they're saying, look, Reuven, he stole Elsie the cow, that's a tremendous bizayon to Reuven. And therefore, we could be kofer the yarshim, we could force them in order to subside, you know, to cause the end of this bizayon, to return Elsie the cow to Shimon, its proper owner. So now we have a problem, because according to Rebbe's interpretation of our Mishnah, we're not talking about Shibudim, we're not talking about Karkos. Nechosim Sheish Lachrayis has to be rewritten, and it means Nechosim Sheish Lahem Shem Veheker B'Dover Shekule Alma Yadi. Everybody knows Shehu Gozel. Says the Gemara, you know what? Rebbe does not have exclusive monopoly rights to interpret the Mishnah, even though he's the editor of the Mishnah. Amalcha Rava. Rava says, Kishachivna, when I die, Rava Oshia, Nafik Levasi. Rava Oshia, who's again before Rava, he's going to come out to greet me. Probably means in the world to come. And why? Because I interpreted the Mishnah, not the way Rebbe interpreted the Mishnah, but the way he, Rav Oshia, interpreted the Mishnah. Now, how do I know that Rav Oshia is going to applaud me because I interpreted according to him? Tani Rav Oshia. The Brice of Rav Oshia says that Agozel Umachil Esbonov Pturim. So far, so good. Pturim Yilashalim. And the reason for that is because at this point, the object that was stolen is no longer be'en, it's been consumed, and there's no chiyuv of hashavas domim incumbent upon the yorshim. And then it says, "V'hiniach lifneim gzeila kayemes." But if the object that was stolen is still intact, is then chayovin, because the nigzal has recourse to say, "This is my object." Oh, ein gzeila kayemes pturim hiniach lemaviim achrayus nechosim chayovim l'shalim. Meaning that now it's crystal clear that the case of achrayus nechosim is an add-on to the case where the object is not. Be'en. If it's not be'en, then it's only a chiyuv damim. If it's only a chiyuv damim, why do the yorshim who are not guilty of gzeila have to pay for the iniquities of their father? And the answer is because it's a nechasim sheyesh lamachrayis. The shibud was chal during the lifetime of the father. Now the nigzal comes and he says, "I want to collect my chov, the debt that your father owes me, from this karka which is mishubedes." Says Rava, that's the interpretation that I claim for this Mishnah, because I'm going to interpret the Mishnah the way Rav Oshi understood the Mishnah and not the way Rebbe understood the Mishnah. Omar Mar, we learned in a Braisa. Ein gzeila kayemes pturim. If the gzeila was consumed by the children, the Arshim, they don't have to pay. To the nigzal, neima to heavy tiyuvta de Rav Chisda. This should be an upshlag to Rav Chisda, because Rav Chisda was the one who said that gazal v'lo nisyashua bailim, that if there was gzela, this was the sugi that we did on Yom Shlishi, and there was no yeush, then whoever comes along and takes this object and consumes it, he has to pay for that. So the Yorshim in this case should be paying. Why does the Braisa say that they're patur? We could have anticipated this answer on our own, that Braisa is talking about a case where there was already Yeush. If there was already Yeush, and we assume, like we saw later in Rami, earlier in Rami Bar Chama, that Rishus, Yoresh Kirishus, Lokeach Domi, therefore, the Yarshim were kona this gzela with Yeush and Shinu Rishus. And therefore it's their object. And if it's their object, then if they ate up this object, if they consume this foodstuff, then they're consuming their own foodstuff. And in such a case, there's no Ratzim Izeg over Ratzim Izeg over, because it's theirs. Omar Mar, we learned in a Braisa. This is the end of the braisa that we had before. Gzela kayemes chayovim l'shalem. If the gzela is still intact, then the yorshim don't have any acquisition, any kinyan on the gzela, and therefore they have to pay. They're not kona this gzela with yeush and shina rishus. Neima tevi tuv to the Rabbi Rachama. Wouldn't this support Rav against Rabbi Rachama that yoresh is not a shina rishus? It's not a kinyan. We could have guessed it. And now we're on Daf Kuf Yud Beis of an Aleph Lifnei Yeush. And therefore, if there was no Yeush, then there is no possibility of the Yorshim saying, "We don't have to pay you," but rather, Gzeil Kayem is Chayovim L'Shalim. The Nigzal has rights to claim his object from anyone on the face of the earth, and certainly from the Yorshim, who inherited from the Gazlan. However, if there was Yeush, then Enochinami, we would support the position of Rami Bar Chama that Yoresh is a Kinyan, and therefore the Yoresh doesn't have to pay because he was Kone with Yeush and Shinui Rishus. Rav Adibar Ava Masni Lahod Rami Bar Chama. Interesting. Now the Gemara wants to reinterpret Rami Bar Chama. You know, very often an Amora will make a statement, and we assume that that statement was made in a certain specific context, interpreting a Mishnah. But often, what happens is, the Gemara makes a roundabout, and says, no, that statement of that particular Amora was not made in the context of Mishnah A, but rather in the context of a different Mishnah or a Braisa. And that's exactly what Rav Adi Bar Ava is going to do with Rami Bar Chama. Rav Adibar Ava Masnei Loha de Rami Bar Chama Aha. That Rami Bar Chama's comment was attached to a Braisa in Masechta Bava Metzia in Perek He. Now, I don't know how many of you have learned Bava Metzia, but if you have, I would highly recommend skipping one Perek, and that's Perek He. My son learned Perek He in the Mir, And then when I saw him a year later, I said, Binyamin, what are you learning this year? He says, I'm still learning Perek He. So I said to him, wait a minute, you learned Perek He last year. So he said to me, last year I didn't understand it. So I said, do you understand it this year? He said, no. So I assume every year I'm going to come back to him annually. He's always going to give me the same answer that I'm learning Perek He. Perek He is called Ezu Neshech, and it's the most complicated Perek in Shas. I would not recommend it unless you have a good deal of time on your hands. Because to read through Perek He, I don't care how many times you read through it, is going to get you absolutely nowhere. Okay, in any event, what does it say in the Braisa in Perek Ezu Neshech? It says the following. Hiniach lahem aviem mos shel ribis. This is not Father's Day. Because this father was not guilty of gzela, but he was guilty of a crime that might even be worse than gzela. I don't know. For that, you have to learn a lot of agadah, and that's the crime of ribis. So he, the father, lent money, and he made a condition stipulating that the lender will pay him back, return more money than what he lent him. That's, of course, ribis. And now, the lover paid up the malva, the father, before he died, a massive amount of money, which is way beyond the amount of money that he borrowed, mainly because the excess is ribis. And now the father dies, and lo and behold, the Yarshim have inherited not just the money, but also the ribis money. And now the lova is coming knocking on the door of the son, of the heir, and he's saying, pay me back the ribis. Says the Braisa, afal pishi yodim shehem shel ribis, despite the fact that the Yarshim are well aware of the fact that what they inherited from the father is ribis money that was illegally taken by the father in a loan of ribis. Ein chayovim lahachzir. Pile ploim. We never found this to be true, that the Yarshim are holding on to someone else's money and they don't have to return that money. Now watch what's going on over here. The lover paid the malva, the father,
more than money.
A ribis money. That money is inherited by the son. Now just imagine in your mind a pouch full of money. That original money that was given by the lover to the malva's ribis is now sitting on the table of the Oresh of Chanoch ben Reuven. Reuven was the malva the ribis. And yet, as we say in Yiddish from Desvegen, the Yarshim did not have to return that money. Now we know that the Torah imposes two laws on a malva ribis. Number one, that he's in guilty of in violation of the lav of neshech v'tarbis lotikah, that he took ribis. And number two, moreover, he is obligated under the pasuk v'chei picha imach to return that ribis to its rightful owner, meaning to the original lover. Now, if that object is still there, like in the case of Gzela, when the object is still be'en, then the Yarshim have to return it to its rightful owner. Lo and behold, the Braisa establishes that in the case of Ribis, the Yarshim, even though they know they're holding on to Ribis, they don't contend or contest the claim of the Lover. They don't have to return the Ribis that's be'en to the Lover. How could this possibly be? The answer is Amar Rami Bar Chama, not the way we understood Rami Bar Chama, as he was making a comment on Gzela, he was making a comment on Ribis. Zoso Meres, what we derive from this, is that Rishus Yoresh, Kirishus Lokeach Dami. What does that mean? That just like in the case of Gzela, a son who inherits Gzela, the original object that was stolen from his father, the Gazlan, he doesn't have to return that original object, says Rami Bar Chama, because Rishus Yoresh Kirishus Lokeach Dami. And if the Gazlan, the Nigzal, was Misyayish, the heir is now Kona with the combination of Yerush and Shini Rishus, as we discussed at great length in the Ramban and Rebbe Chanan at the beginning of today's discussion. The same logic and the same rules apply to Ribis, even though the Yoresh is holding on to the exact pouch of money, of coins, that the lover paid his father the malva as ribis. Nevertheless, the Yoresh doesn't have to return that money. And why? Because Rishus Yoresh, Kirishus Lokeach Domi, meaning that the Yoresh was Kone, as he would be in Zela, the ribis through Yeresh and Shina Rishus. So Rashi asks the obvious question, who says there was Yeresh over here? And Rashi comes up with a whole new principle. And he says the following, that stam love misyayish al ribis. When a person pays ribis to the lender, he doesn't believe, he doesn't dream in the wildest dreams that the lender is going to return this ribis to him. This is a professional loan shark. He's not going to return the ribis. And therefore the postulate is that there was yesh. Not only that, but rishus yoresh kirishus lokeach domi, and therefore the yorshim wakone with yesh and shini rishus. Again, that's okay for Rabbi Bar Chama. That's not good for Rava, because Rava says that the Torah never recognizes a kinyan without a maisa kinyan, and therefore Yerusha could not be a new kinyan. So if that be the case, then just like in the case of gzela, if the gzela is be'en kayemes, the Yorshim have to return the Gzela to the Nigzal. So too in the case of Ribis, if the Ribis is Chai V'Kayam, it's right there, Be'en, in its original state, in its original Arniki, then the Yorshim have to return that. Rava Amal Chol Yolam Emel Chol Rishus Yoresh Lav Kirishus Lokeach Domi, and therefore the Yorshim were not coded with Yesh Plus Shini Rishus Shiny Hocha the Omar Kra. Now, as soon as you see the words the Omar Kra, or Shiny Hoch the Omar Kra, what concept should automatically pop up in your brain?
Exception.
Gzeres HaKosuv. A new Gzeres HaKosuv with regard to Ribis. And what is that Gzeres HaKosuv? The Torah says in the Parsha of Ribis at the end of Sefer Vayikra, Al Tikap Nito Neshef Esarbis. And then the Pasuk says, V'yareisa Melokech. And then it says, these are the three key words, V'che Achicha Ima. The Chayachicha Imach is the source for the obligation incumbent upon the Malva of Hashavas Dmei Ribis. And the Gemara postulates the following drush. This drush is originally brought down in Masechta Bava Metzia Daf Samach Beis in the fifth parak, the notorious fifth parak of Bava Metzia. And what does the Gemara say? Ahadri le ki hechi denaychi ba'adach. The Chayachicha Imach means, you are squeezing this guy, you the Malva, squeezing this Lova for extra funds. The Lova is down and out. He doesn't have the money to support his family, and you're taking ribis from him. Let the man live. And this is the basis for the fact that the Malva has to return the ribis to the Lova, to allow the ribis, the Lova, to live. Because otherwise he's going to suffer a tremendous loss by paying ribis. And there are all sorts of types of ribis. There's even a daily ribis. Says the Gemara in Bava Metzia, L'didei ka mahadur le'rachmona, ma'azur le'rachmona. The Torah is pointing its finger at the Malve and saying to the Malve, let this man live. Libre lo ma'azur le'rachmona. So that even though in Gzela, mind you, the Rava would agree that as long as the Gzela is be'en, the Yarshin, because there's no Kenyan here, have to return the Chefetz HaGazel, if it's be'en, to the Nigzal. But in the case of Ribis, the money of the Ribis is sitting there on the table of the Yoresh. He doesn't have to return it. Why? Because V'chei Achicha Imach is a special Gzeres HaKosuv that imposes upon the Malve exclusively the Chiyuv Hashavas Ribis, to the exclusion of even his Yorshim, even despite the fact that the Ribis is there be'en. And Rabosai, this proves in my mind a thesis that I've always had about the unique nature of the Iser Ribis. And you know that anti-Semites throughout the generations have accused Jews of being loan sharks and taking Ribis and all that. Ribis, my friends, is not gzela. And logically, there's no reason in the world that any legal moral system should object to ribis. If I'm tying up my money for you, I deserve to be paid for that. I could have taken that same money and I could have invested it. There is a super high equality within the context of what I call the Jewish community, to create a certain connectedness, a certain connection between one Jew and the other, like we saw in the Korban Pesach, that they have to eat min ha-menuyim b'chabur ha-achas. Here too, we have to share money that we have. And what does it mean that I share my money with you? I'm going to give you my money for a year, for 10 years, and it's not going to cost you a penny. That's a super-duper higher moral level. When I collect ribis from you, I'm not a gazman. What I'm doing is I'm violating that higher ethical standard that the Torah said that and established in order to create this brotherhood between one Jew and the other. Because we are the Am HaNivchar, the Am Skula. And I have to create that interconnectedness, interrelationship with you. Therefore the Torah says, if I want to take ribbis from a guy, there's nothing wrong. It's not objectionable. Because the Torah doesn't say that taking ribbis is immoral. With regard to Hashavas HaRibbis, the ribbis is a done deal. The lova paid the ribbis. And not only that, the lova might be happy to pay the ribbis. And in most cases, I would submit to you, you could argue with me, that the lova is perfectly happy to pay ribbis. The bank is paying me ribbis, and they're not crying. But the answer is that they got my money, they were able to invest it. No, give me at least a slice of the pie. Give me a 2% rebit, something, chachgar. And the bank is more than happy to give you the 2%. What's it down to now? I think it's 1.5%. It's not too good. To put your money in the bank is not good. Real estate is a little bit more iffy. Not iffy, but iffy. But if you can invest in a good piece of real estate, you can make a lot of money. I don't know about South Africa these days. Somebody told me stay away. That's not where you should invest. But if anybody has any good tips, let me know. Not that I have any money to invest. I just bought this place in Rehov, Rabbi Meir, with a 20-year loan. But it still comes out that for the next 20 years I'll be paying less than the rent I was paying on the same street in number 14. In any event, let's see. We're going to have to do mincha soon, so let's see if we can finally wrap things up. We have here a machlokes between Rabbi Bar Choma and Rava, which fundamentally addresses the issue of a Yoresh, whether Yoresh acquires his estate that he inherits from his father as a kinyan, or he just slips into the shoes of his father. But what's fascinating is that according to Rav Ada Bar Ava, that machlokes between Rava and Rabbi Bar Choma touches on the very essence of ribbis. Rabbi Bar Choma insists that the Yarshim have to return the ribbis to the Lover, even though they were not guilty of a loan with ribbis. The only exception would be if there's a kinyan called Yeish plus Shini Rishus. On the other hand, Rav insists that the Torah has completely alleviated the responsibility of Hashavas ribbis to anyone but one individual in the face of the earth.
The person who took the
That's the Malva, who was Malva Beribis. So that we see that a machlokes that starts with something, shall we say, humble, a little bit low key, now blows up into such a massive, voluminous machlokes as to the whole nature of Hashavas HaRibbis. Man de masli ha-braisa kolshken ha-masnisen, man de masli ha-masnisen ha-braisa, Rabbi Bar Choma k'Rav Masna. The Gemara says the following: if we have Rav Ada Bar Ava as if we accept Rav Ada Bar Ava's attachment of Rabbi Bar Choma to the Brisa of Ribbis, then how much more so can we attach it to the Mishnah? Because again, the simple pshat in the Mishnah was not Rav's pshat; it was Rabbi Bar Choma's pshat. Namely, that the Gzela is Be'en. It was Rav who had to introduce this possibility that the Gzela is not Be'en, and then he has to differentiate between the Reish and the Seif in the case of Nechasim Sheish Lamachrayas. But Manda Mastilea Masnisen, the one who attaches Rami Bar Choma's statement to our Mishnah, which is a simple pshat, of a Braisa, it's very possible that in the case of the Braisa, Rami Bar Choma would interpret the Braisa of Ribbis the same way that Rav interpreted. Namely, that the Gzeiros HaKosuv that exempts the Yorshim, or for that matter, anyone in the world, from returning ribbis. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in the Braisa, Gozel Umachil Es Bonov. Reuven stole and he gave this foodstuff over to his son Chanoch to eat it, to consume it. Pturim Milashalim, Chanoch and his other B'nai Mishpachto don't have to pay it back, but if they did not consume the object. Hiniach lifnehem, and the object is now in the hands of the Yarshim, alive and well. Again, the father's not alive, but the object is alive. Then the Braisa says, "Gdolim chayovim l'shalim, ktanim pturim l'shalim." This Gemara is an absolute pella, and ostensibly, at first glance, makes absolutely no sense. What difference does it make whether the Yoresh is a Gadol or a Katan? The Nigzal has a right to get his object back. He'll take it from a Gadol, he'll take it from a Katan, he'll take it from anyone. And apparently the answer here is that Enochinami, the Katan, certainly has to give back the object to the Nigzal, but the problem is the Nigzal has no recourse to sue the Katan in Bezdin. And the reason for that is twofold. First of all, there's no Tvi against Katanim in Bezdin. And secondly, because there's no Eidus against Katanim in Bezdin. Now, the case of the Nigzal against the son, against the Yoresh, we'll call him Chanoch, is based on two Eidim. If he doesn't have two witnesses to testify that that cow belonged to him, then he's in trouble. He has no recourse to collect from the Arshim. But the only problem is that these Eidim cannot testify against the Katan. So even though the Gzeil is Be'en, the Katanim Peturim, but the Im Amru Gdolim, now you just told me that the Gdolim have to pay, but wait a minute, can't the Gdolim counter-argue against the Nigzal and say, Ein Anu Yodim Cheshbonos Shechishev Avinu Imcha? They come along and they say, I don't know that my father stole this object from you. Well, if there are Eidim, then that's not a very good argument. Peturim, they don't have to pay. So the Gemara immediately asks, this makes no sense. Mishum Diamri ain't on a Yodim, just because they say we don't know whether our father, you know, we don't know all the cheshbonos of our father, his bank account, or anything else. Peturim, it doesn't make any sense. We have a principle, Rabbosei, called Bari Vishema, Bari Adif. It's very nice that the children who are Gdolim are saying we don't know, but that's only a Taina Shema. And the principle is that Taina's Bari overrides the Taina Shema. Again, that's a gigantic machlokas, but let's assume for the time being, and believe that next week we'll investigate this a little further, that Bari Vishema, Bari Adif. If Bari is Adif, so what good is it if the Ketanim say we don't know the Cheshbon of our father? Did he steal it? Did he pay you back? Maybe he paid you back? I don't know. This is what the Braisa really means. You have to reinterpret the Braisa. Gedolim sha'amru, what did the Gedolim claim? Yodim anu cheshbonos shechishev avinu imcha. Our father told us all the calculations and the monetary transactions between him and you. V'lo pashlecha gabei v'lo midi. And he told us explicitly that he has no outstanding debts vis-a-vis your claim. Pturim, then they believe, because then they have a tainas bari. And therefore, they have a tainas bari. So all the Rishonim say, so what if they have a tainas bari? So why should they be believed? There's a halacha called cheskas chiyuv, which means that if I have a shtar or edus that says that you owe me money and you claim, well, you paid me back, you're not believed because I have a chazaka that you owe me the money. So the Rishonim say here that the reason why the Gdolim are believed with a claim that our father didn't, our father was very crystal clear about it, that he doesn't owe you any money, and they're believed, is the answer is because we're talking about a case, and this is Tosus Dibra Maskev Lo Posh, where the Gdolim have a migu. Why do they have a migu? This is the first answer to Tosis. Shahayu Yecholim Lomar Hichzarnu Lecha, that they would be believed to say that we gave it back to you. And we have to understand how they could believe to say that against the Cheskas Chiyuv. Inami, the second answer is a lot easier to understand. Kigon She'ein Eidi Gzela. This is called Apesha Asa Peshehitir. If you have a claim against me and you can't substantiate it with any proof whatsoever, and I admit that you do have a claim against me, then I'm believed with any counterclaim. That's called a pesha asa, a pesha hitir. So for example, if I come to you and I say this karka that I've been sitting on belonged to your father, but I bought it from him, then I'm believed with a pesha asa, a pesha hitir, even though generally I have to produce a shtar. Here too, even though generally these Yarshim would not be believed to say that this Gzela was repaid, but nevertheless here they should be believed. Why? Because there's no Eidi Gzela to begin with. And therefore the Nigzal has no claim to stand on no evidence to base his claim and sue for Gzela. Go prove that there was Gzela. Meaning that the Yarshim could have said to him, Lo hayu dvarim me'olam ladam. What are you coming and claiming this cow? It was never yours to begin with. But since they admit that it was a stolen cow, they should be believed to say that we've already returned the cow to you. Okay then, Rabosai, what are we up to today? Yom Chamishi, right? So I wish you all a good Shabbos. Shabbat Shalom. And hopefully we'll see each other next Tuesday, Yom Shlishi. Okay? It's good. Anybody have a pencil by any chance? I like to make a marking here of where I'm up to. Oh, Maze Eit or Ipagon? Ipagon, Mitsuya. Zachiti. Okay.
There's no Yush, then you're saying with the Karaka.
Matome?
Say you want? With Karaka, yeah. There can't be Yush then.
Well, Karaka ain't an exelt, so I don't know if Yeush would be relevant to Karaka because there's no Gzeil on Karaka. If that's what you're saying, I agree with you 1,000%. If you're saying something else, I'd probably disagree with you. Me and Fry go back a long time, at least I know his cousin David.